Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by the USA Today Florida Network. Abortion and marijuana will be on the Florida ballot in 2024. Trump considers a pair of Floridians for his running mate, and Disney agrees to a settlement with DeSantis. Hello, I'm USA Today campaign reporter Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, gentlemen, welcome to April. We're getting towards the end of spring here. Did you bring some numbers for us this month?
Zach, I did come carting in a number this week. April Fool's is behind us, but I've got a 1-1. It's an 11. And for you Spinal Tap fans, it's not inspired by Nigel Tufnell.
No fooling with John with an 11. How about you, Antonio?
Like Billy Joel, I go to extremes. 60 trillion last month. This week, a 1.
Wow. All right. Antonio is going low today, and I guess, am the highest with a 70. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, the 2024 election has been light on drama in Florida, with the state increasingly trending red and looking like it's out of play for Biden and the Democrats. But the election got a lot more interesting this week when the Florida Supreme Court approved two ballot measures that would legalize marijuana for recreational use and protect abortion rights. The court also allowed a law pushed by Governor Ron DeSantis that outlaws abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy to take effect. John, these are all big developments. Are they really changing the election landscape in Florida this year?
Well, they're certainly altering the way we were looking at election 2024 in Florida.
Yeah, it was looking to be a sleeper, and all of a sudden it's just busy as heck.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most of the narrative so far this election season has focused on just how bad Democrats are doing in Florida. And, you know, with the party outregistered now by almost 900,000 Republican voters, and Biden widely seen as likely to put, you know, little effort into winning Florida because it was just such a mountain to climb. But now with these amendments front and center, Biden's campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez, just told us that Florida is in play and they plan to put in a strong effort here.
Now, what's your take on that, John? I mean, how much of that is a head fake to the Trump campaign? Do you think that they're serious?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, there is some, you know, hope for the Democrats right now here in Florida, but I still tend to think there's a lot bigger and better battlegrounds for Biden to face off with Trump. And Florida is still going to be a long shot, you know, to try to win the state of Florida. It's a tough state, you know, under good circumstances, let alone the fact that the state is trending red, as you pointed out. But the abortion access measure that's going to the ballot, now that really fits perfectly into a central theme of the Biden reelection campaign, that a vote for him is effectively a vote for restoring abortion rights that were stripped away with the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision of 2 years ago. The Florida ballot proposal is probably going to bring more women voters, more younger voters to the polls. And these are sectors that clearly support Biden over Trump, but who so far their intensity and, you know, eagerness to vote has really been questioned. Then you have recreational marijuana on the ballot, too. That also will likely bring a younger demographic, most analysts seem to assume. And President Trump does not do well with, you know, that cohort either, you know, young voters or women. But now, admittedly, you're going to get Republicans that are voting for both measures as well. You know, there's plenty of MAGA Republicans who probably want to see recreational marijuana approved. But all told, it seems to be a winner for Biden right now. You know, I think everyone realizes that Florida is still going to be tough for any Democrat, whether it's Biden or Debbie Mercosal Powell, the likely challenger to Republican U.S. Senator Rick Scott. But what these ballot measures do, not only pull voters to the polls, they will also require Trump and Republicans to spend more money here and make appearances here. And, you know, they can't take Florida and its 30 electoral states for granted now, presumably. And when you start, you know, when you drag that money and those resources and time away from other more vigorous battlegrounds, you know, where Biden actually has a close to maybe a toss-up chance of beating Trump, presidential races are really run on a huge mosaic of states. And if Florida is a hotspot that needs tamping down by Republicans, well, that takes away from their efforts elsewhere. And so, you know, really, these rulings expand the presidential map. And for Biden, that was a huge plus right now.
And John, you mentioned money. It was a big question as to whether Democrats would spend any money here in Florida. Now it seems like probably there will be some money spent, at least to get out the vote for these ballot initiatives, right? I mean, getting on the ballot is a big step for these constitutional amendments, but it's really just the first step. Now they have to go out and convince people to vote for these things and to try and bring people out to the polls to vote for them. Some of these ballot measures have pretty organized campaigns behind them. Do you think there'll be some money spent on get out the vote efforts, on advertising these things that could be helpful to Democrats in the state?
Yeah. No, I think they will. As you point out, yeah, both of these ballot initiatives got to the ballot after spending a lot of money. I mean, they were big ticket items. The legal medical marijuana industry is the biggest financer of the recreational marijuana measure, and abortion rights measure also got huge funding and is going to probably get even more funding with national groups weighing in. It's interesting, though, too, that both of these measures, to a degree, the sponsors of them are kind of trying to stay away from the partisan politics of it. They don't want to make it sound like that a vote for abortion rights is a vote for a Democrat, especially in a state like Florida, where there's a lot of Republicans. So it's kind of interesting. They're trying to walk a little bit of a knife's edge there when it comes to they don't want to be perceived as Democratic backed or Democratic helping, because they're trying to make it, you know, on their own on the merits of both the abortion access issue and recreational marijuana.
And on the other side, the Republican Party is already gearing up to fight the abortion amendment in particular. So there's going to be some money spent on that side as well. And, you know, DeSantis won by almost 20 points. So, you know, whether the money spent on turnout and some of these things is actually enough to close that gap is a big question mark.
And he's weighing in against it as well, you know, right, quite openly. So, you know,
yeah, he said he doesn't want the state to smell like marijuana, right?
Yeah, that seems to be one of the driving issues for him.
He's got a sensitive nose. Up next, two Floridians are on Trump's vice presidential shortlist.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
Well, not only will abortion and marijuana be on the 2024 ballot in Florida, a Florida Politico could have his name next to Trump's as the former president's running mate. Senator Marco Rubio and Congressman Byron Donalds both are reported to be on Trump's short list of possible running mates. Both have expressed interest in the job, but there are some constitutional complications, right, Antonio?
Yeah, there are, but I think there's a workaround. Basically, the constitutional implication is the 12th Amendment that basically says that, you know, on a ticket, the two should not be, at least one should not be an inhabitant of the same state as the other. And the way that's been interpreted is that you can actually be on the ticket, but then you can't, you basically forfeit that state's electoral vote. And if you look at that electoral vote map, there's no path to victory for Mr. Trump if he can't pocket Florida's 30 electoral votes. Now, the workaround is what happened in 2000. That was the last time the 12th Amendment really came into play in the George W. Bush, that would be number 43. And who ran with Dick Cheney. At the time, both were residents of Texas, but Cheney, if you recall, had been a member of Congress representing Wyoming. He had lived in Wyoming, was from that area. So he hastily reapplied for Wyoming residency ahead of the deadline and obviously qualified. And then there we go. We had history of the Bush-Cheney ticket that won in 2000, thanks to Florida's 537 votes here. And then was reelected in 2004. So there is a workaround, and Trump, for example, could just resubmit his residency and be again a resident of New York. That seems kind of touchy because of all the legal issues he's got in New York, everything from the trial coming up later this month on the hush money, the purported hush money payment to Stormy Daniels, to then also the E. Jean Carroll civil defamation lawsuit. And don't forget the fact that the state attorney general's lawsuit against him in that civil case where he's had to put up a $175 million bond. So there are pretty hard feelings between Donald Trump and the state of New York. Another possibility could be New Jersey, where he has his Bedminster golf club and resort, and where he actually spends a good time of the summer. So he could legitimately apply for residency in New Jersey and basically clear out this issue.
Right. But is he that enamored of Rubio or Donalds that he would actually want to change his residency to have them on the ticket when there's a lot of other potential running mates?
Well, they are. But you know what? I will say, you know, Donalds is somebody who has been a rising star in GOP politics. And actually he's one of the few MAGA Republicans that has been willing to go, for example, on CNN and defend the president and before, you know, a pretty, you know, contentious panel discussion. So he's kind of earned his stripes there. Rubio's kind of like the really interesting one because...
Yeah, what's your take on him? Because some people would say that he's not necessarily a great fit. I mean, a lot of people still remember when he ran for president in 2016 and it was down to him and Trump and Cruz, and Rubio was scathing in his criticism of Trump and really went after him hard at the end. And obviously he's, you know, kind of made up and kind of gone more into the MAGA camp since then, as most Republicans have. But, you know, it does seem like Rubio is still a little bit more aligned with certain establishment figures, especially in the foreign policy side. And it is maybe surprising to some that he would be interested in being Trump's running mate.
That's absolutely right. But I think he's also got ambition. We know he did run for president, so he does have that ambition. Look, there are various things here. First of all, as you mentioned, Rubio really comes out of the Ronald Reagan city on a hill, big tent, you know, optimistic morning America Republican Party. And he's never been, like you said, he's never been a great fit in the MAGA world. And in fact, when he tries, I've seen him a number of times. He speaks every so often at the Forum Club in West Palm Beach. And when he tries to do the MAGA line, it doesn't really come off great. You and I remember back in 2022, we were covering, you know, he was up for re-election and we went to rallies that we covered rallies where he appeared with DeSantis in Miami. I was there when he appeared with Trump. And it's very clear that people attending those rallies were really there. The Republicans who were there really to see DeSantis or Trump, not so much Rubio. So he's still seen with some suspicion. And that actually goes back to when he ran for Senate and won the Senate in 2010. He ran as a Tea Party Republican. particularly hardline immigrant positions, then kind of did a flip-flop, and the MAGA, well, the Tea Party MAGA segment of the GOP really never forgave him for that.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing here, and this is why I think he really is in play, is if you're looking at this year's primaries, you're looking at that Haley vote. That's kind of like the same crowd as the Rubio crowd. And in fact, remember 2016, Haley endorsed Rubio,
sure.
And he did pretty well in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Right. So you're looking at, even in Florida, Haley drew about 13% of the vote. She drew 43% in New Hampshire, although that's kind of a little bit fudgy because they allow independents and Democrats. So let's put aside New Hampshire, but she did get a quarter of the votes in Michigan, and that's a really important state. And I was on the call this week with Julie Chavez Rodriguez when they were talking about how Florida's in play. And what they have been really aiming at, when they say they're in play, what they're really talking about is going after those Haley voters. And if not winning them over to cross the line, cross the aisle and vote for Biden, at least have them stay home or basically leave that the presidential line item on that ballot empty or pick somebody else, one of the other candidates. So if you, Rubio probably coalesces and gives you more of that big tent, and when you're looking at a really close election, as we, you know, a much closer, obviously, than in 2020, that's a real consideration. And that's why I do think, I mean, I think both of them are under consideration. I think Donald's brings a lot of firepower to that ticket. He's kind of the guy that would really have Trump's back. It's, you know, that's what really these VP candidates are. Somebody, you know, to be your pit bull, your attack dog. And Donald's would do that, and he would do it convincingly to the MAGA crowd.
But Rubio would kind of be like the Pence of this election cycle. He would quiet some of the concerns of a certain segment of the party, even though he's not a lot like Pence in disposition.
But that's a good analogy, because what Pence brought you was the opening to the evangelicals that have proven so important to Trump. And what Rubio brings you is those more establishment conservatives and moderates that you need to keep in the big tent to win a close election.
Well, for what it's worth, you know, I talked to a Republican who has known Rubio for a long time, and this individual told me that they think that Rubio really wants it, that based on, you know, this isn't based on inside information, but based on his public appearances, based on what he said, you know, he's been asked about it, and he's had the opportunity to say that he doesn't want it, and he hasn't done that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he came out and endorsed Trump right before the Iowa primary, which was a significant endorsement. You know, it undercut Haley, who had endorsed Rubio, and undercut DeSantis, who was, you know, Rubio's home state governor. And this person that I talked to said that everything that Rubio has done in the last few months seems like he is interested in being Trump's running mate. So, you know, this does seem to be a serious potential pairing here, and we'll see how it plays out. Up next, the feud between Disney and DeSantis takes another twist.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
Well, the feud between DeSantis and Disney took another twist when the two sides reached a settlement over control of the government agency that oversees Disney's properties in Central Florida. DeSantis also appointed a new person to lead the agency's board, who is seen as not quite as antagonistic towards Disney. John, this is being portrayed as a truce between the two sides. How do you view it?
Well, it seems like a truce, although DeSantis did declare victory, boasting how the company had backed away from the agreements that had made 2 years ago, then in an effort to retain some influence over the district when it was being taken over by DeSantis appointees. But, you know, I think maybe larger, Disney seems ready to move past the whole parental rights fight, the don't say gay measure that was approved in 2022. And that's, Disney opposed that measure, and that ultimately triggered the governor's takeover of the companies.
And it didn't seem to be a great fight for either of them. It obviously didn't help DeSantis. It didn't really seem to do much for him in his presidential campaign. And for Disney, I mean, they need Florida. That's their, you know, their business is the theme park business is pretty central.
Yeah. And it kind of seems right now that Disney realizes that, that it's in Florida to stay and that DeSantis will pass eventually. Mm-hmm. I think the company has sort of taken the long view, and the Central Florida Tourism Oversight Board, which in simpler times was known as the Reedy Creek Improvement District. Now it has a new administrator in Stephanie Kapalousis, who's she's served Florida governors, including DeSantis, in a number of jobs. So I think it's kind of a page turning time at the Magic Kingdom. For DeSantis, maybe not so much, since he's still kind of pounding his chest about how the settlement that was a victory. He said that it proved he was, quote, right on parents' rights, right on changing the local government, and right that all the covenants and development agreements made at the 11th hour are null and void. So, he kind of spiked the football over this. But, what really I think also is going on is Disney's got other issues, and maybe this settlement was driven by internal business decisions as much as anything. CEO Bob Iger this week had to fend off a challenge to his leadership by activist investors, particularly billionaire Nelson Peltz, who's pushing the company to make a plan for leadership after Iger. And he's also blasting the company's efforts to make more diverse movies and shows. This guy is, Peltz is a formidable rival. He's a former DeSantis donor as well. Peltz is somebody who has ridiculed the company's Marvel products that, he said are too focused on gender and racial diversity. Peltz lives in Palm Beach, and, he defected from the DeSantis campaign last year when, like a lot of these, big billionaires and hedge fund guys, they spotted that the governor was a likely loser. But Peltz still shares a lot of the same anti-woke worldview as DeSantis. So I think Iger and Disney leadership thinks prolonging this 2-year fight with Florida, that was rooted in Don't Say Gay, which, remember the opposition to Don't Say Gay began under previous leadership of the company.
And they've basically lost that fight. I mean, it's the law has only expanded, and it's expanded around the country. So it doesn't seem like there's much they can do to stop that anymore.
Yeah. I think they're ready to kind of back off this fight and just let it be.
Yeah. And they also, you mentioned this activist investor, they also have competition from Universal that is opening a new theme park in Orlando, and they probably need to get their ducks in a row to make sure that they're competitive going forward. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, I have one, and that is the number of primary challengers that have stepped up so far, to Republican first-term incumbent Laura Lee out of Tampa. Now, Laura Lee is, again, serving her first term, and someone who has a record of public service. She had been the director of the State Division, Florida Secretary of State, and director of the State Division of Elections. It was under her tutelage, and she was in that capacity appointed by Governor DeSantis during his first term, and she was in that capacity during the 2020 pandemic elections that were run pretty well in Florida. Before that, she was a judge. Her husband, by the way, is Tom Lee, a former Senate president, who then served as CFO during the insurance crisis of the late 2000s, and basically helped right the ship there and start depopulating citizens' property insurance. So the question is, well, wait a minute, you're somebody who is a long-term Republican who has served well. So, as far as we can tell, has a good track record. Why would she have a primary opponent in August? Well, because Laura Lee endorsed Ron DeSantis for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, not Donald Trump.
She's and the only that, one to do it. Only member one. Of Congress from Florida to do it.
The only one, and that is an act of disloyalty. And as we've said many times, the glue that holds MAGA together is the perception of loyalty. So now you've got this gentleman, Brian Perez, out of, I believe, Newport Richey, who has thrown his hat in the ring. And he basically said, hey, Donald Trump went on Truth Social, called for a MAGA opponent to run against Laura Lee. He said, quote unquote, I'm the number one MAGA person out there. That's what he told our colleague Gary White at the Lakeland Ledger. And now he's thrown his hat in the ring. And there will be others. So here we go. We got Perez, a former Navy veteran, really has had never held public office, but he may well get Donald Trump's endorsement. And we've seen how that has gone in Florida. So this could be another indication signal of how much sway the former president has in his home state for the moment. But very influential, obviously, and he is the kingmaker here.
Yeah, and this is Exhibit A on how Donald Trump keeps his grip on the Republican Party by challenging any of these Republicans who oppose him.
Demanding absolute loyalty.
John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my number is 11, and you know how I like to go into the Wayback Machine. Well, just as Florida is making news now as a state that will have abortion rights on the ballot this fall, an issue that, you know, may prove a vote driver that could help President Biden and maybe Democrats. 11, that's the number of states that back in November 2004 had another vote driver on the ballot. That was the ban on same-sex marriage. Remember that when that was an issue. Just as Democrats now are trying to promote abortion rights as a central issue in this year's presidential race, Republicans 20 years ago were seeking to get some additional help at the polls by getting on the November ballots in 11 states measures that banned same-sex marriage. This was a backlash against places like Massachusetts and Vermont, which had begun allowing same-sex unions. Florida wasn't cutting edge that year, remarkably. It didn't approve its own same-sex marriage ban until 2008. But in 2004, that was a presidential election year, and Congress had been unable to pass a national ban. The George W. Bush White House began promoting these votes in part as a way to, kind of drive conservatives and help the president in November in his race against Democrat John Kerry. Remember, the Bush family was always viewed somewhat skeptically by the Republican Party's hugely important evangelical wing. And the same-sex marriage bans were a way for him to appeal to this vital voting bloc for Republicans that otherwise, just might not turn out as enthusiastically for him. This sounds a little like what we're seeing now with the Biden White House's push for abortion rights measures, which 7 states have already embraced and which Florida and a bunch of others may still put on the ballot, for the fall. Florida is definitely going on, but other states are still in the process, it seems like. George W. Bush was seeking re-election that year, 2004, and he barely had squeaked into the White House, as Antonio pointed out earlier, on the strength of carrying Florida by 537 votes after a 36-day standoff in 2000. And of course, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq were dividing voters too. In the end, all 11 ballot measures were approved, most of them in red states that Bush also won, probably by slightly bigger margins, thanks to conservative turnout. Bush won Ohio that year, which was especially crushing to Kerry. Of course, the same-sex marriage bans all effectively disappeared with the U.S. Supreme Court's approval of same-sex marriages in 2015. But, it's one of those like nothing new under the sun moments. So, Republicans 2 decades ago, it was same-sex marriage ban. This year in Florida, at least, and for Biden and Democrats, it may be abortion rights that brings voters to the polls. That and, maybe recreational marijuana, which also is going to be on that November ballot.
Yeah, and it seems like it helped Republicans choose turnout this year. We'll see if it does the same for Democrats. Well, my number is 70, as in 70% of Florida voters currently support the constitutional amendments protecting abortion rights. That's according to an article by Mark Caputo in The Bulwark, who talked to Ryan Tyson, a well-respected pollster in Florida who worked on Governor Ron DeSantis's presidential campaign, is known for producing accurate polls. Tyson said that in his survey, about 70% of Floridians currently support the abortion rights constitutional amendment. That's good news for supporters of that amendment. That's a pretty strong position to be at going in. You need to get 60% of the vote to be able to pass a constitutional amendment in Florida. However, as John and I talked about earlier, once this these campaigns ramp up, the things could change. Governor DeSantis has come out against this. If he is campaigning against it, that could move the needle with Republicans. The Republican Party of Florida has come out against this. And if they put some money behind it, that could move the needle. And the more partisan this becomes, the less likely that it passes. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our production guru, Rob Landers. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.